The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, I got a great show today. We'll talk with Katie Brown. Katie Brown is over at the American Life League. My friends there are awesome. They're very cool. And she's got some thoughts on young people and pro-life. And she's a bright, fresh voice. I like talking to her, and so we'll look forward to that. We also will talk with Mike Davis, an update on what he's seeing with the FBI, the broken system, the fact that the FBI is not complying with the House requests, and also that they're going to allow, they have a document, it looks like, that is very damning for Joe Biden. So we'll see more about that. We'll get an update from Mike Davis. But first, what you need to know, a quick one today. Let me tell you, I was over at the Capitol for the debt limit vote in the House. It's a bad thing. It's a rotten thing. It's way too much spending. Now, I will give the Republicans credit for at least changing the dynamic and not having themselves put in the position of the ones who closed down the government and then they reopened it 3 weeks later or 2 weeks later, so you get nothing out of it. On the other hand, it's just a bad deal. It's more spending. It's not very many limits. There are some work requirements for some of the welfare programs, which I guess is a positive thing. But in general, at this point, you can say this. The swamp is broken. And the swamp is so deep now. It's got so much depth. It's got so much wealth. It's got so much power that I was more depressed. I don't know what else they could have done. I don't know what the Republicans could have done differently. I really don't. But ultimately, that just means that the system is set up in such a way that they're trapped in a system that's broken. And it's a broken system. It's just a terrible system. It's a terrible way to operate our country. It's a terrible way to go forward. It's just rotten. And what you need to know is it's totally rotten and totally swamped up. And I don't know when the public is going to say enough is enough. I was with Paul Jacob. Paul Jacob's a guy who pioneered term limits in the country, and people demanded term limits for a while. And then ultimately it was beaten back. And so we have more power in Washington, more power in the budget, more power through taxes than ever before. And it's a disaster for this country. So what you need to know is I'm pretty depressed. I'm pretty depressed. Now, luckily, we're going to talk with Katie Brown, who gets me excited because she's a 20-something kid, young woman who is dynamic and pro-life. But it's pretty depressing. It's pretty depressing. The debt limit vote is depressing, all of it, because the government's too big. And it's hard to see how you turn this battleship around, how you shrink Leviathan. So I'm sorry that's depressing, but that's what you need to know. And we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest has been with us before, probably a month or two ago, Katie Brown. Katie Brown wears a number of hats. She is the director of the Marion Blue Wave, which is at the American Life League, one of their projects. Very interesting, very important. In fact, Katie, I forget who I was with. And he brought up this gentleman. Oh, I know who it was. And he said that the starting point is most of these things are efforts that are for pro-life are not starting in prayer. So Marion Blue Wave, which we'll talk about in a moment. And Katie Brown is also the director of media relations at American Life League. But I think of you, Katie, because every time I see you, I ask because you are, I don't know what, about 5 or 6 years out of undergrad. So you're solidly in your 20s. And I think to myself, what will you say about the pro-life movement and young people and young adults in this crazy world we're in? So welcome back, first of all. And let me ask you now, a lot of coverage in the last few months of post-Roe, post-Dobbs world and what's going to come next. How do young people, how are people, professionals in their 20s and others, how are they reacting to post? Make it sound like it's the apocalypse, the media does. What's your thoughts? You've been around the country a bit speaking and listening. How are people reacting, younger people?
Well, first, thanks for having me, Ed. It's great to be back. But I would say, and this is something that I've noticed more so in the last year, or I guess it's been just about a year since Dobbs, happened and everything that last June. Yeah. I think it's woken a lot of people up. And it's been one of those issues that I think young people tend to shy away from just because, you know, nobody wants to have a conversation about abortion. Nobody looks to have a conversation about, you know, life issues in general, really. But I think that this has been something where it just got crazy enough last year where young people who maybe were kind of middle of the road, didn't really understand too much about abortion, kind of looked around and said, hey, wait a second, what's really going on? Because nobody really wants to be on the side of people, you know, rioting, beating right. people up in the streets, setting things on fire. Nobody wants to be a part of that. And so I think, at least from what I've seen, is it really got young people asking important questions. And so one of the things that I do that it's not something that we really do too much with on the media side of things, but one of the things that I do at American Life League is that I'll help students, kind of answer questions for whether it be end of year projects in their high school year or in their college years or whatever. And I've noticed that the questions that I've gotten in the last year are a lot more thoughtful in the sense that it's not just kind of, you know, why does American Life League not support exceptions for rape and incest and mother?
Right.
It's been more so like, why is abortion wrong? Can you explain to me what abortion really is? So I think it really got kind of kids asking important questions and I think hopefully woke a lot of people up to what's really going on.
You know, again, we're talking with Katie Brown, Director of Media Relations over at American Life League, and also the Director of the Marion Blue Wave, which we'll get to in a moment. But on that point, it feels like after Roe v. Wade's reversed, lots of people are saying, I think it's true, what's next for the pro-life movement? Mm-hmm. You know, your grandmother, Judy Brown, famously started the American Life League in the late 70s. And for decades and decades, we all, when we stepped in or stepped out, or in your case, when you were born and you got involved in this, you thought, well, someday maybe they'll reverse this. But man, we got a long way to go. Suddenly it's reversed. And everyone's like, oh, what next? And strangely, some of the groups want to talk about 6 weeks, 15 weeks, you know, when to ban partial birth abortion and all, which feels a little bit like yesterday's argument. And in the sense that if you think it's a life, then, you know, you think you've got a problem when you end a life. And then I'm willing to pull back and say, and this is what, again, where I think, you know, you were a graduate of Belmont Abbey College, you know, one of these sort of elite liberal arts colleges. These are bright kids and all around you. But even at a Catholic college like that, the culture is just sort of, it's just soaked with sexuality and soaked, not even the wokeness, just the, you know, the hookup dynamic, all this stuff is soaking you. Even if you're being good and your kids are being good. And I that I have children, my daughter's in college and all. So the culture is so far, is so soaked in things that aren't our values. And yet we're not having that conversation. To your point, we're going to debate 6 weeks, 15 weeks when we should be sort of trying to broaden the cultural conversation to what is this? Why does it happen? What does it mean? How does motherhood relate to person? It feels like that's really lost.
Oh, absolutely. And this is something that I was actually just talking to somebody about, because I mean, of course, we're pro-life in the sense that we don't advocate for any kind of abortion at any time, as you were saying. Right. But the fight almost shouldn't even be there. And I get that might be kind of a, you know, what is she talking about kind of thing. But it feels like almost when we get to that point where we're pushing, you know, here are your other options. You don't have to have an abortion. Here's what else you can do. We're almost kind of too late. And the conversation really should be before a mom or a young woman even gets to that point. The conversation should be, you know, whether it's making better decisions, surrounding yourself with better people, you know, kind of avoiding this hookup culture, this toxic culture of, you know, that reduces women to just what their body can do and not who they are as a person. That's right. Kind of where the conversation needs to shift, especially since there's so much confusion in the political sphere now, because everybody wants to have a ban. Everybody wants to do some kind of quote unquote pro-life law that really just kind of advocates for regulated killing. So I think mm-hmm. the conversation really needs to shift to more, you know, what does our culture look like? What are we feeding young people? What expectations are we setting for young people? And if we look at, you know, these expectations that young people think that they need to meet, it's leading them to these bad decisions later on. So I think that that's really where the focus and the culture needs to shift.
So the interesting problem, and again, we're talking with Katie Brown, Director of Media Relations over at American Life League, and also she's the head of the Marion Blue Wave, which, again, I promise I'll get to that. But the interesting problem here is that the forces on the other side have lots of money. And the forces on the side of life and the life, not just life in pro-life, but the life, the culture of life, they have plenty of money, but they've been confused. I think like the bishops, many bishops have lost credibility and lost standing because of their own poor decisions, and also because they're fearful of the culture, whatever the case may be. You know, the Los Angeles Dodgers are having, you know, horrendously hateful people at their stadium to honor them. And you go, and one of the reasons I was initially put down and to talk to you is this report, the 2023 report on Planned Parenthood CEO compensation, which, you know, you and I've talked about, and others there, your dad, Hugh Brown, the head of the organization or executive vice president. We were talking to legislators about it in the last few days, but it's tons of money. We're not talking about like $100, $670 million last year. I think that's the right number to Planned Parenthood. People that are running Planned Parenthood are getting very, very wealthy. You know, if you want to be a pro-life volunteer, you don't make much money. I mean, not even volunteer, a paid person. You don't make much money. It's something you're called to. And you and I both could make a list of all these folks. But the other side is a lot of money, a lot of force, and many, many people, especially young people, I think, you know, it's easier not to stand up to it. It's easier just to go along that this is the way things are. I saw a study or a survey, you know, lots of young men, for example, are not confident and hopeful about relationships. Well, that's because they've not been taught about real relationships. They've been shown, you know, relationships on TV or worse, in pornography, that are not real. Right. So, but again, mm-hmm. I guess my point here, or my question, Katie, is the size of the enemy is almost beyond, it feels like David and Goliath, like on steroids.
Absolutely. And that's, it's funny you mentioned that, because as you're speaking in my head, I'm like, this is a David and Goliath situation. And it really is. And I mean, look at, you know, like you said, we're working on the CEO report that's about to drop. But, you know, just before this, we had the Planned Parenthood annual report come out where, you know, their net excess revenue was over $200 million. And of course, that's just excess. That's what they, you know, need to put down so that they don't lose funding next year. But in terms of, you know, even just private contributions, you know, people who just made, you know, maybe like a recurring monthly gift, they brought in almost $700 million wow. in just contributions and bequests. And that's not even counting another $670 million in government funding that they received in last year. So, I mean, when we talk about what we're up against, this is not an easy fight in terms of breaking down the numbers. Because, I mean, your average, you know, crisis pregnancy center, your average home for mothers doesn't see that kind of money in a lifetime, let alone a year. So we're definitely up against a big battle here. But I think the most important thing that we have that they don't have, and this is something maybe where we can chat about the Marion Blue Wave a little bit, is we have prayer. Our side.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. I was going to segue to that. Tell us about it. I agree with you. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
Our side is prayer and the truth. So tell us about Blue Wave and also what it means.
So before I get into a little bit about the Marion Blue Wave, I just want to say, and this is something that I tell people all the time. And I feel like when you talk about prayer, people kind of talk about it in terms of like a last resort. You know, you'll hear the phrase like, all we can do is pray. And they say it like, you know, we've got nothing else we can do. The only thing we can do is say a prayer. But I think we need to switch that focus and look at it in terms of the best thing that we can do is pray. And so that's kind of where our Marion Blue Wave comes in. And so basically the program just asks people to say a rosary once a week for the specific intention of ending all types of abortion and shutting down Planned Parenthood facilities. So it's definitely a Catholic program, but you know, we don't have just Catholics a part of it. We've been around since 2019. And in the last 4 years, we've seen more than 71 Planned Parenthood facilities shut down for good. And we've also had more than almost 10,000 people around the world and around the country sign on to be a part of this program. So it's been really encouraging to just kind of see the support from not just America, but also surrounding countries and, you know, over in Europe and other continents push this movement too, because, you know, I think we forget we're not the only ones fighting abortion over here. It's a global issue. So it's one of those programs that obviously, since we're based in America, it's focused in America, asking people to pray here. But I think it unites us in such a bigger way too, because it's a humanitarian issue. You know, we're losing preborn brothers and sisters every day, not just in America, but everywhere. So it's been a great community that unites people all across the world, all praying for the same intention.
We're talking again with Katie Brown, Director of Media Relations over at American Life League, and ALL.org is the website. And she also heads up the Marian Blue Wave. You will see people say, you will see characterizations sometimes in polling that young people are more pro-life. They're more open to being pro-life. The late Phyllis Schlafly, for whom I worked and she was great friends with your grandma, Judy Brown, the founder of the American Life League. It was always said that one of the great shifts was the technology, ultrasounds, 3D ultrasounds, being able to see that this is a baby, not just an argument, makes a big difference. But is that how does it relate to prayer? I mean, the COVID thing sent a lot of people into themselves a bit, and maybe sometimes into a tailspin, but sometimes into more spirituality. Are you seeing, especially with young people, but in general, more people, is there a surge in the Marian Blue Wave? Is there people coming towards it in a way that's different than it was maybe when you started?
Oh, absolutely. And this is one of those things where, you know, COVID was such a difficult year for everybody. And I think when you look back on it, the isolation was what really got everybody down, especially people. But that was kind of where the Marian Blue Wave, that was the year we took off. We launched in 2019, but we didn't really see much traction until 2020. And I think it's because, so the nice thing about the Marian Blue Wave is, you know, all we really ask is that you say a rosary once a week, and you can say it from anywhere, whether that's in front of your local Planned Parenthood facility, you know, in your church, in your living room, on your way to work. It doesn't matter where you pray it, as long as you say it for that specific intention of ending all types of abortion and shutting down Planned Parenthood. So the nice thing about the Marian Blue Wave is you didn't have to be, you know, with a group of 50 people in front of your local Planned Parenthood. You could do it from anywhere. So I think that's why we saw such a surge of people join in 2020 and beyond, because it really created this kind of virtual community of people all praying for the same intention. And on our website, we have a map that shows exactly where people are signed up praying. And it just hovers over their zip code area, you know, to keep everything confidential. But it really created a blue wave of sorts across the nation and across the world of showing exactly where all these people were praying. Mm-hmm. So it definitely kind of inspired a little bit of a virtual community, which I think meant a lot to people, especially in 2020.
MarianBlueWave.com. If you go there, you can see, you can join to get emails. You can look at the campaign, and the map is very cool. I have it up right now. I'm looking at it. It's a great resource. Kind of, like you said, it feels like solidarity. You're like, oh, look at all that. So, very good. Yeah, very good. All right. Katie Brown, Director of Media Relations over at American Life League, as well as the head of the director of the Marian Blue Wave. Again, MarianBlueWave.com, to check that out. Thanks, Katie, very much. And we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Ed.
All right. I will put up on social media. Thank you, Katie. I will put up on social media all those links. I'm making sure I got those links so I don't lose them. And you can check them out and get on the email list. You should go to ALL.org and get on the email list. Judy Brown, the great Judy Brown, the founder. She still writes three times a week, two times a week, whatever. And they're great. That generation is awesome writers. So her updates are always interesting and timely. So, okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Time to check in with Mike Davis. Mike Davis, of course, has the worst Twitter handle in the history of the world. His Twitter handle is @MRDDMIA. I don't even know why, but I'll just retweet him and I'll put his Twitter handle up in my social media. He is, of course, the founder of the Article 3 Project. If you go to article3project.com, I think I got that right. Article 3, the number 3 project.com. And he and I were exchanging texts. He had a great point on the Hunter Biden, the Joe Biden stuff we'll get to. But welcome back, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ed, and I also have a terrible face, and so I'm perfect for radio. So
that's right. You. That's right. Yeah, that's, it is true. I agree with that. But all right. Hey, you tweeted this the other day. The FBI is now admitting that it has a document that shows Vice President Biden, then Vice President Biden, took a foreign bribe. And so, but first of all, recount for me, Mike, and our listeners, the FBI is resisting a subpoena from the House, and pretty forcefully at this point. I mean, meaning they're just, he's just stonewalling Ray, right? I mean, and so, you know, we did this once before. I think even Eric Holder, the attorney general, was held in contempt. I don't know that there's any way to get him to do this. Is this a showdown with the House? Is there a way this goes forward successfully for we the people?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think Chris Ray's already caving to the pressure. What has happened here is the FBI has 8 documents that then Vice President Joe Biden took a $5 million foreign bribe from China and changed American policy. And the FBI has covered up for Joe Biden for years. My former boss, Chuck Grassley, Senator Chuck Grassley, along with House Oversight Chairman James Comer, got wind of this, presumably from a whistleblower. They have seen this document, so they know it exists. The FBI tried to pretend like this document never existed. Then the FBI is trying to say that it was, you know, you can't interfere with law enforcement and you're going to reveal sources and methods, which is the typical obstruction BS that comes out of the FBI. The FBI has to be accountable to the American people through our elected members of Congress. They're not above the law, even though we've treated them like they're above the law for way too long. They have this document. There's no legitimate reason that Congress cannot see this document. This document shows that the president of the United States is compromised by corrupt foreign dealings, including as evidenced by the fact that he was willing to sell out one of the highest offices in the land to our worst enemy for personal gain when he was the vice president. So there's no question the FBI is going to have to turn over this document. Chris Wray not only should be held in contempt of Congress, he should be impeached, and House Republicans should just cut off the FBI director's funding, cut off his airplane, cut off the perks of his office until he caves.
Your point is, we're talking Mike Davis again, founder and head of the Article 3 Project and great commentator on the law and all the branches of the federal government, since he's actually served in each of them. Your point is the way this fight has to take place is controlling the money, right? I mean, you can say, do this. It's the right thing to do. Ultimately, if they don't do it, you can hold them in contempt. You can hold back the money. I mean, because that's the, so that, but that showdown, Mike, won't part of this be, play out the string, exchanging letters, maybe getting to something and sort of, delay?
Well, I mean, we've seen that exchanging letters actually works, as we've seen here. I mean, they're actually showing that they're actually telling members of Congress they can go to the FBI and look at this document, which they never do in the past. That they're just completely obstructionist. Here's the deal. The FBI got caught covering up for Joe Biden. This is part of the FBI's pattern of interfering in the presidential elections. They did this in 2016, and as we've discussed, Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, had an illegal home server that was hacked by our foreign enemies that showed evidence that the Clinton Foundation was an illegal pay-for-play bribery schemes while she was the Secretary of State. So what does the FBI do? They collude with Hillary's campaign, President Obama, Vice President Biden, the Attorney General, the CIA director, to concoct the Russian collusion hoax and unleash the crossfire hurricane investigation that hobbled Trump for 3 years, right? And then in 2020, the FBI interfered again because they covered up that Joe Biden was corrupted, compromised by millions of dollars of Chinese, Ukrainian, Romanian, other corrupt foreign payments to Joe Biden and every scumbag, sleazeball Biden, except for the four-year-old granddaughter who they don't acknowledge. And then in 2024, the FBI interfered again because Trump declassified via presidential memo the day before he left office and took his copy of the Crossfire Hurricane records. And Biden knows that those are so damning, so he worked with Garland to send in the FBI to go get back these records. They went to that biased magistrate judge, Bruce Reinhardt, who had just recused from Trump's civil lawsuit versus Hillary 6 weeks prior because of his Facebook post where this magistrate judge was bashing Trump. Somehow this judicial bias went away 6 weeks later when they did this home raid on President Trump to go get back these Crossfire Hurricane records. They pretended like they were going back to get classified records. Presidents, former presidents, are allowed to take their records, their presidential records, when they leave office, including classified records. That's why Congress gives them secure office space called SCIFs. The office of the former president, with federally funded staff, with security clearances, with Secret Service protection. It was just a complete bogus cover to say that they were going to get back classified documents from Trump because he's allowed to have these classified documents under the Presidential Records Act.
Mike Davis, our guest. Mike, but so the showdown, by the way, Crossfire Hurricane, those documents, who else has that? I mean, does somebody else have a copy of that? Because now that it's been snapped up by the FBI, is it going to be gone?
Well, that's a very good question, because that was the whole point of the raid. How else do you justify an unprecedented, unnecessary, unlawful home raid where you just simply ignore the Presidential Records Act, the statute that is directly on point for former presidents having their records? You ignore that. You go to a biased judge. You get this BS home raid. You send in an army of FBI agents and do this high profile home raid. And then you tamper with the evidence. You take the folders of the classified documents and arrange them in the way that makes it look like it was just horrific. Like Trump was just so reckless with classified documents that he had them just strewn all over his office floor. This was a complete setup. It was to get back these Crossfire Hurricane records. And that's a very good question, Ed. Who has another copy? I understand from news reporting that Biden actually tried to Biden reclassified these Crossfire Hurricane records, and he's trying to bury them. He does not want the American people to know that Obama, Biden, the Attorney General, the CIA director, the FBI colluded with Hillary Clinton's campaign to try to steal the 2016 election from Trump and give it to Hillary.
But does the Durham investigation have a full set of them? And insofar as that was a special investigation, I don't know that's a term I'm using. Do they have a set? And more importantly, does the Durham report, which I have not read closely, I know you have read it, I think, but does it conclusively say? Doesn't it already say Obama and Biden were involved? That they were there. They were in the room. Yes. They knew it.
Yes, absolutely. It says that. And that it's amazing how the media has just chosen to ignore that. There is a classified part of Durham's report that I presume includes a lot of these Crossfire Hurricane records that Biden snatched. But you never know. Ed, who knows? And that's why when House Republicans call in Durham for their oversight hearings, they should ask them these kind of questions. I'd like to know why Durham did not interview former FBI Director James Comey or former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe or former FBI Senior Intel Official Peter Strzok. These were all dirty actors in all this. Apparently, John Durham didn't interview them. Why not? Why didn't he subpoena them? We're beyond the statute of limitations. What would be any Fifth Amendment issue with them trying to claim the Fifth Amendment if we're beyond the statute of limitations? Why didn't he subpoena them and have them make these claims from the Fifth Amendment? Why didn't he try to give some people immunity to get to the bottom of this? There are a lot of questions. Maybe Durham has a very good reason for the way he handled things. He was able to put out this very damning report, and I know that that was no easy task, but why did it take so long for him to do this? Why did it take so long that now we're beyond the statute of limitations? Why didn't he interview the key bad actors? And so those are questions that House Republicans need to ask.
Does a document like the Office of Special Counsel's report, the so-called Durham report, as a matter of, I guess, legal practice, so I guess the law, it's not a legal conclusion, right? It's a report to the Attorney General saying, you asked me to look at this. Here's what I see. In other words, it doesn't have the force of a court filing. Right? Is that correct? And sort of what does it have the weight of then?
I mean, it would be persuasive. Like I would compare it to any prosecutor's, I would compare it to a prosecutor making allegations. Right.
Okay. Right.
They would still need to be proven in court beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right. Right.
You can't look at this report and say this person's guilty or that person's guilty because it's in this report. But I would say that, you know, if there is evidence in this report and there's not contradictory evidence or not contrary evidence, it's pretty damning for the people who are implicated in the report.
All right. One last thing, Mike Davis. What triggered me to call you, to want to talk to you and get you on the air and get an update from you. Again, we're talking with Mike Davis, Article 3 Project, article3project.com, is your tweet. And you said, okay, now that the FBI has admitted that there are documents that tie then Vice President Biden to what looks like a bribery scheme or at least payments, now you can bet on an indictment. And you went on to say, not an indictment of Biden, but it'll be a Trump indictment. I mean, within minutes of me seeing your tweet, there was this leaked report, I think to NBC, which means it came straight from the intelligence community, as far as I can tell. And it said, we've got an audio tape of Donald Trump saying, I totally, knew it was everything was classified. And I'm telling you, whatever. I don't even know the details. Of course, it didn't say the details, just said dramatic. Now, I've noticed that reporting has slowed. But tell me what your thoughts are. And now you've got, I don't know, 5 or 6 years of consistent record of what will happen to Trump and what the media will do. What's your thoughts that happens next?
They're absolutely going to indict him. They indicted him with their Soros-funded Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, with bogus charges up in New York, of this bogus election law theory that was passed over by the prior Manhattan DA, the U.S. attorney, the Federal Election Commission, Alvin Bragg himself, before he took heat from the left and brought in this Matthew Colangelo from the Biden Justice Department and cooked up this bogus theory to indict Trump. And That's part of the lawfare up in Manhattan. There's also the Jack Smith investigation for the classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, along with President Trump objecting to the 2020 presidential election, which is specifically allowed by the Electoral Count Act of 1887. And then you have Fannie Willis out in Fulton County, Georgia, who's looking also at the objection to the presidential election. It is only a crime to object to presidential elections in third world Marxist hellholes. You actually have a statutory right under the Electoral Count Act of 1887 to object. You also have a First Amendment right to object to presidential elections. And that includes twisting arms. That's part of the political process. It's not a crime. Politics is a messy business, and it's not a criminal business unless you're trying to put your enemies in jail like they do in third world Marxist hellholes. So as to Jack Smith on the presidential records, of course, just like I said in my tweet, it was like on cue. The second Biden got cornered with this clear evidence that he took a foreign bribe, $5 million foreign bribe from China, and changed American policy as VP, the FBI director admitted that document exists. And so what happens? Garland's puppet, special counsel Jack Smith, this partisan Democrat operative, decides to selectively leak out that Trump had this document. Again, Ed, here's the key point. Former presidents are allowed to have their presidential records. They're allowed to take their presidential records when they leave office. It does not matter whether they're classified or not, because as we discussed, Congress gives them all these, that the office of former president and all these security measures, these documents never leaked for the 18 months that Trump had them after he left the White House. And remember, he used Mar-a-Lago as his office as the president of the United States. So it's clearly secure. They only started leaking when Biden and Garland sent their FBI agents to go raid Mar-a-Lago and get back these documents, including the Crossfire Hurricane documents. It is not illegal for President Trump to have his records. He is allowed to take his presidential records, and there is a there is a Clinton sock drawer case. President Clinton had, it was like 79 audio recordings, 8 years of highly classified audio recordings of his presidency, including discussions he had with foreign leaders. And he had these in his sock drawer, these 79 tapes in his sock drawer. And this Obama judge correctly ruled that under the Presidential Records Act, when presidents take their presidential records, the mere act of taking them when they leave office declassifies them and makes them personal right. under the Presidential right. Records Act. Right. So if President Trump took records with him, even classified records, it doesn't matter if he didn't understand the law or if he misunderstood the law. It doesn't matter. The, as a matter of law, those are his presidential records. He's allowed to have them, and they're declassified.
Yeah. Well, we can rest assured. I think, Mike, you've proven that we're going to have there'll be more media coverage and more actions by the left as things get closer and closer to Joe Biden. All right, Mike Davis, thank you as always. Appreciate it. Article3Project.com. Check it out there. Follow him on Twitter. I'll retweet it, and we will talk again soon. Mike Davis, everybody. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Mrs. Schlafly was a courageous and articulate voice for traditional values and common sense for more than 70 years. Now, continuing that legacy, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
NATO's expansion of war in Ukraine continues in a misguided attempt by unelected globalists who demand that rulers subordinate national interests to global governance. As the 2024 elections get underway, Donald Trump has been speaking out against reckless warmongering that could spark World War III. While Trump was expounding his pro-peace platform at an overflow rally in Waco, Texas, Russian President Vladimir Putin was moving tactical nuclear weapons to Belarus along the northern border of Ukraine. Belarus is allied with Russia, so nothing can be done to prevent this. Russia's move horrified clueless Western globalists who thought they had checkmated Putin by having him indicted by the International Criminal Court. Putin is obviously unfazed by that self-appointed tribunal, which lacks jurisdiction over him in Russia. Tactical nuclear weapons are designed to deliver atomic bombs against battlefield targets rather than destroy civilian infrastructure, as was done in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. For over 75 years, dropping nuclear bombs has been unthinkable. But launching nuclear arms against tanks and soldiers could be an initial step to an all-out nuclear war. After Putin's nuclear flex, polling showed that Americans agree that peace is more important. As Joe Biden's approval dropped to his nearly all-time low, with only 38% of Americans approving of his job performance, according to a survey by AP NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Trump may save our country by campaigning against this war, but it's up to the American people to let our elected leaders know now that we don't approve of American involvement in a war between two gangsters halfway across the world. There is nothing in Ukraine or Russia worth going into a nuclear war over. Even though America could potentially prevail against Russia, what could that possibly gain us, and at what cost? These are the hard questions our leaders should be asking, yet only Donald Trump seems to be willing to count the cost.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. As leader of the free world, America has a responsibility to stay strong in economics, industry, morality, and military capability. Never hesitating to say America first. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, you'll see why the best foreign policy begins with a strong America. Join the conversation at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, wrapping things up today, let me say thank you to so many of you for tuning in. And you know, I wanted to point you in a direction. Earlier this week, I had a chance to go to lunch with John Lenzowski. He's the founder and the former president, the chancellor of the Institute of World Politics. Been around for about 40 years now. And it's a graduate school of national security, intelligence, and international affairs. If you go to their website, it's iwp.edu, iwp.edu. You'll be interested. Just a fascinating place. And here's what I was, what made me think of it. I was speaking with him about the Monroe Doctrine, which, as my listeners know, is something that I care a lot about, and the continuing validity of the Monroe Doctrine. And he brought up, and we talked about how the Monroe Doctrine and its understanding, the understanding of the Monroe Doctrine, its history, is particularly applicable to the question of the communist Chinese regime and how the Chinese are influencing America, infiltrating America, it feels like, but also influencing. And he gave me one of his articles, an essay he wrote called Conquest Without War, The Threat of Chinese Political Influence Operations. Well, my point here in telling you this is, first of all, check out his work. Check out the work that they do over at the Institute of World Politics. Very cool. All kinds of folks there that study there as students, that lecture there. A lot of folks that were former State Department. John himself was a Reagan White House guy on the National Security Council. Lots of military guys and gals that go through the school, the Institute of World Politics, get graduate degrees or whatever. So really interesting. But also, I want to tell you, it's not just my wonderful thoughts, my brainstorming. John Lenzowski agreed the Monroe Doctrine and the 200th anniversary, which comes up in just a few months, December of this year, is well worth our focus, our attention, to bring to light the issues of the infiltration of America by the communist Chinese regime. So I was encouraged. I encourage you again, go to check it out at iwp.edu is our website. And we'll have a lot more on the Monroe Doctrine, I hope, in the coming months as we get ready to celebrate it and understand its relevance in our world and in our nation and for our national security. As always, thank you to Noah Dingley, our great producer, Ryan Hyde, associate producer, and thank you for listening. Don't forget, visit proamericareport.com, sign up for the daily email there, and we'll be back tomorrow. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Thanks for listening.
America Report on The Answer, San Diego.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.